Welcome to SMT Pod, the premier audio publication of the Society for Music Theory. Today, popular music theorist and composer Brad Osborne is going to tell us about the emergence of the major three chord in postmillennial pop music and how this chromatic chord forms loops that contain elements of both major and minor keys. Let's kick off this episode with a section from a song by Brad's band, Darkipelago. The song is called Serpentine, and it was released in 2017 on the album Agape.
You've just heard a clip from my song Serpentine that exemplifies the topic I'm going to be talking about today, dual leading tone loops. But what does that mean exactly? A leading tone is the pitch exactly one half step below the tonic of a key or a scale. If I play a D major scale and stop on the leading tone, C sharp,
Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, Fa, Ti.
You'll desperately wish for me to play the tonic, D.
Da.
The same thing happens if I play a B minor scale and stop on its leading tone, A sharp.
La, ti, do, re, mi, fa, si.
You'll desperately wish for me to play that tonic, B minor.
La.
You might then say that the first scale I played was in the key of D major, and the second scale I played was in the key of B minor. Those two scales are actually called relative scales, aka relative major and relative minor, because they share the same seven notes. In fact, the only note they don't have in common is the A sharp, the leading tone of B minor, which is not in the D major scale. So here's the weird thing about my song. Its chord loop, or series of repeated chords, contains the leading tone for both of those keys. If I limited myself to the D major scale, I'd use seven total pitches, but I'm using just a slightly broader eight-pitch palette, one that also incorporates that A-sharp leading tone for B minor, and this is why I call it a dual leading tone loop. Why have I spent so much time navel-gazing at my own compositional process? Well, it was through this creative practice that my initial hunch came about, that this harmonic system, the dual leading tone loop, was part of a much broader cultural practice. There was obviously something going on in post-millennial popular music that spontaneously and subconsciously influenced me to compose my song this way, and I simply had to get to the bottom of it. Where and when did I start hearing these dual leading tone loops? And how did they come to influence my creative practice? Let me offer three possible cultural touchstones from about a one-year period between 2014 and 2015. You just heard a clip of what I remember as the first time I noticed a dual leading tone loop, which was in 2014 in Max Richter's score for the HBO series The Leftovers. I was absolutely obsessed with this show and remember learning on piano this four-chord loop that recurs throughout the show. Those chords are
C minor, A flat major, E flat major, G major.
which forms a dual leading tone loop on E flat major and its relative key, C minor. The leading tone of E flat major, D, is heard in the melody.
E flat D, C, F, E flat.
And the leading tone of C minor, B natural, is heard as the third in that G major chord.
D, G, B, C minor.
The more digging I did, it seems like a lot of dramatic television episodes were using dual leading tone loops in a 5-year period between 2014 and 2019, including episodes of Succession, A Handmaid's Tale, and later, Euphoria. And I discovered a fruitful interpretive strategy in hearing the conflict between these two leading tones as animating internal conflicts within individual characters' psyches. Take two salient conflicts throughout The Leftovers, for example. After 2% of the world's population mysteriously vanishes in an instant, these people are known as the Departed, their loved ones seek closure, and yet also do not seek closure, since, to quote Travis Clark writing for Medium, closure, quote, would indicate that what happened to their loved ones is definitive or explainable, like death, end quote. And writing for The Guardian, Sarah Jones identifies an internal conflict among characters who both embrace and reject supernatural explanations of what happened to the departed, which she sums up nicely as, quote, spirituality versus skepticism. Then, in 2015, just a year later, I saw a music video by the band 21 Pilots called Stressed Out that uses a dual leading tone loop. In this clip, you'll hear the four chord loop
A minor, G major, C major, E major,
which forms a dual leading tone loop on C major and its relative key, A minor. The first three chords fit squarely within the key of C major, while the fourth chord, E major, adds the G sharp leading tone for the key of A minor. In this chorus, the narrator begins by feeling nostalgic, longing for the good old days with their comforting mother, but laments, "Now, we're just stressed out." The music video makes this conflict even more explicit. We see shots of band members doing childish activities, like riding humorously small tricycles and sipping juice pouches, juxtaposed with confronting the challenges of their adult lives, namely, how to make money in the music industry. The chorus makes this conflict particularly poignant, showing the band members rehearsing in their childhood bedrooms. Finally, a third example. Later that same year, a little musical called Hamilton came out. Like most people, I got to hear Lin-Manuel Miranda's music in audio form only before getting to see the show. So when I heard the opening number from the original cast recording, Alexander Hamilton, I immediately recognized its dual leading tone loop. Here's the clip containing leading tones for both D major and the relative key B minor.
And every day while slaves were being slaughtered and carted away across the waves, he struggled and kept his guard up. Inside, he was longing for something to be a part of. The brother was ready to beg, steal, borrow, or barter.
Then a hurricane.
I hear these conflicting leading tones as animating the conflicts Alexander Hamilton embodies, how he rises up from his humble beginnings as a, quote, bastard orphan, to become, quote, a hero and a scholar. Now, to be clear, I am absolutely not mapping these conflicting meanings onto antiquated notions of major equals happy and minor equals sad. In other words, it's not the A-sharp resolving to B minor that represents bastard orphan, and the C-sharp resolving to D major that represents hero and a scholar. It's just that these conflicting notions in the lyrics map onto a similar sense of conflict between two perceived tonics. So in 2024, I published my initial findings as a video in SMTV, another official publication of the Society for Music Theory. In that video, I presented this interpretive strategy, mapping television composers' use of the dual leading tone loop onto internal conflicts experienced by on-screen characters. Near the end of that video, I speculated on how dual leading tone loops might underpin similar dramatic narratives in multimedia, like musical theater, and even introduced a little teaser about how they might happen in pop music from time to time. Then I started hearing them more and more in pop music, so I got curious. Just how common are dual leading tone loops in postmillennial pop music? And might it be fruitful to borrow this notion of conflict in the two leading tones as an interpretive strategy for understanding meaning in postmillennial lyrics that may also exemplify conflict? So, this is why I'm here making this podcast, to shed light on these questions. We're going to be listening to a lot of music, figuring out how the dual leading tone loops work, and deciding whether or not it makes sense to interpret the accompanying lyrics through this interpretive lens of conflict. Before I start digging into examples that explore this link between harmony and lyrics, it's important to understand some of the music theory underpinning these observations. When I started talking about how this music might sound like it's in two keys at once, the major and the relative minor, some of you may have been thinking about an idea now about 50 years old called the double tonic complex. Robert Bailey first drew our attention to this facet of Western classical music in the late 1960s, showing how composers such as Gustav Mahler would blend two relative tonic chords, such as C major and A minor, into a single four-note tonic sonority, C-E-G-A, which was simply the fusion of both chords played simultaneously. Popular musicians may think of that same four-note sonority, C-E-G-A, as simply a C6 chord, which is extremely common in jazz and earlier Tin Pan Alley music. To wit, in 2020, Drew Nobile enlarged this idea of the double tonic complex to include popular music chord progressions from artists like The Beatles, Tina Turner, and Sarah McLachlan. Nobile believed that this facet of popular music was prominent enough that we ought to start considering that major and relative minor really aren't separate keys, but rather that they blend to such a degree in popular music that, quote, tonality encompasses multiple keys within a single concept, their differences reduced to small details that fade from our mental focus, end quote. I agree with Nobile that to call any of the musical examples I've played for you thus far either major or minor simply misses the point. Each of the songs I've played and will continue to play throughout this podcast blend aspects of both. Where my examples may differ from Nobile's is that he analyzes fully diatonic, seven-note passages that could fit entirely within a major scale as double tonic complexes. Such passages lack the extra leading tone needed for the relative minor. I would thus call my dual leading tone loops a special case of the double tonic complex, in which leading tones are present for both relative keys, resulting in a broader, chromatic, eight-pitch palette. A year after Nobile's article was published, Trevor DeClercq codified a system called six-based minor. In order to explain the importance of six-based minor, let me first take a second to explain what Roman numerals are. In music theory, we use Roman numerals 1 through 7 to identify chords within a key. For example, in the key of C major, the chord built on C would be 1, the chord built on D would be 2, and so forth. And if you prefer Nashville numbers over Roman numerals, as DeClercq does, they work in basically the same way. DeClercq's six-based minor system capitalized on Nobile's observation that choosing between major and relative minor keys in pop music simply misses the point. He points out that analysts are likely to confuse otherwise equivalent chord progressions if we analyze the minor tonic as one. Take the four-chord loop in Stressed Out, for example. A minor, G major, C major, E major. One person might say that this loop is in the key of A minor and therefore analyze it as 1, flat 7, flat 3, 5, but another person might say that it's in C major and analyze it as 6, 5, 1, 3. To avoid the confusion of analyzing the same chord progression in two different keys, DeClercq says we should always analyze major tonics as 1 and relative minor tonics as 6. I happen to agree. But to those who might complain that such a system tips the balance in favor of major keys, After all, why do they get the Roman numeral 1? De Klerk offers the following, quote, "Our recognition of the chord's location in the scale precedes and is not mutually exclusive of our reading of the chord's function," end quote. He goes on to explain how we already know that chords whose roots are related by third often share a similar function, like how 4 and 2 are both predominant chords. Therefore, it should be no problem to also consider both 1 and 6 tonic chords, and both 5 and 3 dominant chords. So, while I haven't used Roman numerals to this point, I am, for the rest of the podcast, going to wholeheartedly embrace De Klerk's 6-based minor notation system. I'll henceforth refer to all minor tonics in these chord loops as 6, and the dominant for that 6 chord as major 3. While you don't normally speak the quality of a chord before a Roman numeral, I'm going to continue to say major 3 to emphasize that this is a chromatic harmony which needs an extra 8th pitch not found in the major scale. In order to explain just what this extra 8th pitch is, allow me to quickly introduce the concept of scale degrees. Just like we use Roman numerals or Nashville numbers to identify chords within a key, we use scale degree integers 1 through 7 to identify the pitches in that scale. So, just like a C chord is Roman numeral 1 in the key of C, the pitch C is scale degree 1. But if a pitch is altered relative to that key, we need a sharp or a flat before the integer. So, to make the major 3 chord that's heard in every dual leading tone loop, I would use the following scale degrees.
3, sharp 5, 7.
That sharp 5 is the leading tone for the relative minor, the 6 chord. While 6 and major 3 represent the tonic and dominant pair for the relative minor, the tonic and dominant pair in the major key is 1 and 5. The 5 chord is made up of these scale degrees.
5, 7, 2.
With scale degree 7 acting as the leading tone for the relative major, the 1 chord. Moving forward, all of my examples are going to contain these dual leading tones, both sharp 5 and 7, which will be resolving to scale degrees 6 and 1, respectively. Despite agreeing with Nobile that this music really is in both major and relative minor at the same time, when I'm trying to tell you what key a loop is in, I'll just name it using the relative major. So when I say that a loop like Stressed Out is, quote, in the key of C, just know that what I really mean is in the key of C major and A minor simultaneously. Let's now talk a little bit about the kinds of chord loops I'm going to be discussing. First of all, what even constitutes a chord loop? In a recent corpus study of chord loops in 541 songs, Aditya Chander and Ian Quinn defined a chord loop as a unit of between 2 and 8 chords that appears consecutively at least 2.5 times. One thing I really like about this definition of a chord loop is that it can help us separate true dual leading tone loops from individual instances of a major 3 chord. Such individual instances of a major 3 chord within an otherwise diatonic context would probably be better analyzed as what music theorists call an applied dominant, a chord that momentarily tonicizes a chord other than tonic without disrupting the overall tonality of the home key. Take the verse of Baltimore's kooky 80s hit Tarzan Boy, for example. That basic chord loop is just 3 chords long, D minor, B flat major, C major, which in the key of F sounds like this.
6, 4, 5.
After 3 loops, the 5 chord is followed by a chromatic A major chord.
Major 3.
The A major quickly tonicizes D minor before immediately moving to a 5-1 cadence to end the phrase in the home key of F. Let's take a listen. In the space of 12 chords, we hear a single applied dominant, which seems more like a diversion away from the 3-chord loop than a core element of that loop. Chander and Quinn would thus define the three-chord succession 6-4-5 as the true loop, while the longer 12-chord span would fail their test for loops. And I think this accords with the way most people hear things. In a book all about repetition, Elizabeth Margulis recounts an empirical study she conducted that indicated listeners focus on, quote, short repetitions when they are first encountering a piece. And she goes on to talk about how it's only through immersion in subsequent listening experiences that we perceive, quote, more global levels of musical organization, end quote. Now that we know what kinds of chord loops we're talking about, what about the ordering of the chords in those loops? A forthcoming study in the journal Music Perception by Shea, White, Hughes, and Vuvan aims to figure out how the metric positioning of certain chords in fully diatonic chord loops affects our perception of tonic. Take a really common loop, like 1, 5, 6, 4. Their findings indicate, unsurprisingly, that if that chord loop starts on the 1 chord, then people will perceive that chord as tonic and thus hear the passage as more major. But if we flip the same 4-chord loop around to begin on the 6th chord, 6-4-1-5, then that change in ordering will actually cause people to hear the 6th chord as more stable and thus perceive it in more of a minor key. And while their study focused exclusively on diatonic chord loops, it got me thinking about how the exact placement of the major 3 chord in my dual leading tone loops might affect our perception of tonality. For if a major 3 chord resolves directly to 6, that would make a pretty good case for more of a minor hearing. Take the dual leading tone loop in Bisson's 1 in a Million, for example. The loop not only begins on 6, but it ends on major 3, meaning that we hear the minor key tonicized on the hypermetric downbeat of each phrase.
Sometimes I can hit you every day, and sometimes you can fall for everyone you see.
While we're on the topic of how major 3 resolves, we should probably also talk about how the 5 chord resolves. If 5 goes directly to 1 in a dual leading tone loop, it's going to contribute to the sense of majorness in the loop. But here's where things get a little tricky. While every dual leading tone loop, by definition, has the major 3, they don't always contain the 5. So, in a dual leading tone loop without the 5 chord, where do we get that all-important leading tone for the major key, scale degree 7? Because if that's missing, we don't actually have a dual leading tone loop. Take, for instance, the chord loop from Cage the Elephant's 2015 song Trouble, C major, E major, A minor, F major, which sounds like this in the key of C. It obviously lacks the 5 chord, but remember that scale degree 7 is always present as the chordal fifth in the major 3 chord, since that chord is spelled 3, sharp 5, 7. Furthermore, scale degree 7 is a common melodic note, especially in lead vocal melodies. As we listen to the Cage the Elephant intro, I'll do my best to draw your attention to scale degree 7 in the untexted vocalese with my vocoder. As a way to structure and order the remaining examples I want to analyze, I'm going to continue highlighting which combinations of major and minor, tonic and dominant, that is, 1, major 3, 5, and 6, are present or absent in the examples. I'll then assess how well those songs fit my proposed interpretive strategy, that dual leading tones might act as a harmonic animator of lyrics that concern conflict in postmillennial pop music. Let's start with loops that contain all 4 of those tonic and dominant chords. One interesting facet about a chord loop composed of those 4 chords is that it would treat each member of Bailey's double tonic complex, aka the C6 chord, C-E-G-A, as the root of a triad, yielding the chords 1, major 3, 5, and 6. We've in fact already heard three such songs that do this: D'Archipelago's Serpentine, 21 Pilots Stressed Out, and Bisson's One in a Million. I already explained the main conflict in the chorus of the 21 Pilots song, the stress of modern life versus the nostalgic comfort of a mother's lullaby. And Serpentine also has lyrics that exemplify internal conflict. It's about two people who meet at a bar and exchange pleasantries, including a kiss on the cheek. And while both of them appreciate the affection, they know not to take it any further since both of them are in monogamous relationships with somebody else. And Bisson is also singing about conflict. He ruminates on the conflict between fleeting loves that hit you every day versus true loves, which might last a lifetime. That song is also looped for about 2 minutes in the film Miss Congeniality to underscore the conflict Sandra Bullock's character feels while dancing on stage pretending to be a beauty pageant star, although in actuality, she's really an undercover agent investigating a plot to assassinate Miss USA. So, are there any songs that use this most extreme form of dual leading tone loop, with tonic and dominant for both major and minor keys, that don't express some kind of internal conflict in their lyrics? Well, I'll let you decide whether the lyrics count as conflicting or not as I play the chorus from Stolen Dance, the 2013 viral hit by German duo Melky Chance. Well, what do you think? I'm actually not hearing much conflict here. I'm actually hearing the narrator wallowing in a kind of stagnant existence. This accords with Stephanie Acevedo's observation that, quote, the repetition and return to a chord could signal stasis as ultimately having gone nowhere, end quote. The chorus by itself features themes of desire, perhaps sexual, perhaps for drugs, with a cryptic warning not to talk about it. Within the context of the verses, which are more clearly about someone or something that has been taken away from them, themes of lost love and or addiction start to arise. But in any case, I'm not really hearing this narrator being pulled in conflicting directions. In that most extreme category of dual leading tone loops, containing both tonics and both dominants, I have three examples that animate internal conflict in the lyrics and one that doesn't. Let's see about another category of dual leading tone loops. This next category contains only one dominant. And since it wouldn't be a dual leading tone loop if it didn't contain major 3, that means the chord we're missing is 5. And yet we are still going to get the major key's leading tone, scale degree 7, provided by the chordal fifth of that major 3 chord and probably somewhere in the melody, both of which we already heard in Cage the Elephant's Trouble. Here, I'll let you decide for yourself if you hear internal conflict in dual leading tone loops from two songs. The first is Listen Before I Go by Billie Eilish. Her chord loop is F major 7, E 7, A minor 7, C major 7, which sounds like this in the key of C. You heard me say the number 7 after each of those chord roots because all four chords are extended to contain whichever sevenths occur diatonically in the key of C major. Interestingly, this means that the tonic major 7th chord, spelled 1, 3, 5, 7, contains its own leading tone. Here's what that sounds like in the original recording. As I play it, remember to pay attention to the lyrics. The second clip of this type, missing the 5 chord, is heard in the verse of Leve's song Goddess. The progression is F major 7, A major, B flat major, B flat minor, which sounds like this in the key of F. 1, 7. This four-chord dual leading tone loop is often associated with Radiohead's 1993 song Creep. It also features some harmonic similarities with the Billie Eilish song, especially the melancholic tonic major seventh chord. Check out the chords and lyrics here.
Were you surprised by me when you took me home? When the glamour wore off, reduced to skin and bone, I can't even tell who you want to.
The conflicts in Leve's lyrics are poignant enough that they've already been identified by music critic Alex Harris. He says that Leve, quote, lays bare the jarring dissonance between the glamorized goddess persona and the stripped-down vulnerability of her true self, questioning whether her lover truly sees her for who she is or merely an illusion, end quote. Eilish's lyrics, on the other hand, offer a disconcerting lack of internal conflict. Indeed, they've caused a good deal of moral panic among critics and parents alike for seemingly glorifying suicide, an aspect of Billie Eilish's lyrical output described at length in a 2023 article by Jessica Holmes. So yeah, no conflict in this one. It's just about one of the bleakest Eilish songs I know. We've just heard an incredibly bleak song harmonized with two tonics and one dominant. But I'm about to show you a similarly bleak dual leading tone loop, harmonized in kind of the opposite way, with two dominant chords and only one tonic. Here's Anoni's In My Dreams, featuring the chord loop D-flat major, E-flat major, C major, F minor, which sounds like this in the key of A-flat. Take a listen to these chords and lyrics in their original context. We just heard major 3 resolving directly to 6, but the 5 never resolves to 1. And these lyrics are entirely negative, detailing the protagonist's nightmares about how they aren't loved by, and are actually hurt by, the object of their affection. There's obviously no sense of conflict here, but I think we could go further and actually appreciate how this entirely negative emotional valence in the lyrics might be bolstered by the lack of a major tonic chord. It's also worth noting that, unlike most pop songs, where you have one chord loop for the verse and a different chord loop for the chorus, Anoni's loop lasts the entire song. An empirical study done by Thayer, Rush, and McAdams studied how listener attention shifts when one of the two primary musical layers is repetitive and the other isn't. They observed that, quote, when one of the two lines consists of immediate and exact reiterations of a short fragment, listeners generally attend to the other concurrent, more varying line. The listener's attention moves to other more attractive and novel parts, end quote. So, with our attention more squarely placed on Anoni's novel melody and lyrics, we as listeners are probably left to wallow in the sadness of those lyrics even more than if there were changes in the chord loop. With that idea of repetition in mind, let's now listen to two different sections of a song. I'm going to play you the verse-chorus pair of Eminem's I Need a Doctor. And even though the chord loop stays the same, a dual leading tone loop in B-flat, listen for all the other contrasting elements between these two sections, including the difference in lyrics between the rapped verse and the sung chorus.
You pick me up. Fighting you, it's tough. Let me turn on the lights and brighten me, enlighten you. I don't think you realize.
fucking mic or you gon' haunt me. But I'm out of options, there's nothing else I can do. Cause
I would say that the chorus, sung by Skylar Grey, is entirely negative. Its lyrics are about impending loss at the 11th hour. But in the previous verse, we hear Eminem rapping about a lot of conflicts. A little bit of context is helpful here. He's basically rapping in second person to his hero, mentor, and producer, hip-hop legend Dr. Dre. Eminem's meteoric rise to fame in the late 90s and early 2000s was almost inversely proportional to the decline of Dre's fame. Eminem's lyrics here reveal that he owes a lot to his producer, and despite his best efforts to convince Dre that he's still got it, Dre's depression and self-doubt continues to grow. The verse culminates in the most powerful line, with Eminem realizing that, having crossed into the realm of tough love, Dre's gonna react in one of two ways. He's either gonna fight him or hug him. It doesn't get much more conflicting than that. Both of the preceding examples had two dominant chords, major 3 and 5, and only one tonic, the 6th chord. I've actually only got one example where there are two dominants and the only tonic is 1, the chorus of Olivia Rodrigo's Vampire. While the verse uses the same creep progression as Leve's Goddess, let me help you hear the much more interesting chord loop in the chorus. It starts off with a 2-5-1 progression in F.
2-5-7-1.
Then adds the major 3.
Major 3.
But never actually resolves that major 3 to 6.
I've made some real big mistakes, but you make the worst. One look fine, I should have known it was strange. You only come out at night. I used to think I was smart, but you made me look so naive. The way you saw different parts as you sunk your teeth into me.
If you know this song, you know that the lyrics throughout describe a conflict common to both pop lyrics and real life. You think you know somebody, but then they deceive you. In Rodrigo's chorus, the conflict turns internal, when the narrator realizes that there were warning signs all along, but they were blind to those warning signs due to their focus on the positive. This causes the narrator to blame themselves for not noticing the warning signs sooner. Whereas once they figured themselves clever, now they realize they might be naive. All of this negatively tinged internal conflict is harmonized by two dominants and only one tonic, ironically, the 1 chord. And actually, with the verse sticking to the creep progression, we don't even get a 6 chord in the entire song. So there you have it, a dual leading tone loop that never capitalizes on tonicizing the 6 chord. Now if I could only find another. Well, it's just about time for me to wrap up, and I'm going to leave you with two avenues I'm already pursuing to extend this research. I started this podcast by pivoting from my previous publication on the use of dual leading tone loops in multimedia in order to focus on how they occur in recorded, audio-alone popular music. And this was probably a good call for a podcast. After all, you wouldn't be able to see any visual elements I might be analyzing. But now I think I need to fully embrace the multimedia moment popular music finds itself in right now by analyzing dual leading tone loops in music videos and perhaps even TikTok reels. Are music video directors, choreographers, DPs, and editors responding to the harmonic conflict in dual leading tone loops and a sense of conflict in the corresponding lyrics with any conflicting visual elements such as contrasting sets, lighting, angles, or quick cuts between opposites of any kind? And while we're on the topic of interpreting conflict between lyrics and any other musical or visual elements concomitantly, how sure am I that there's a demonstrable correlation between those things. After all, in a recent statistical study of the lyrics to about 15,000 popular songs, Albarasky and Durkee identified as one of the three most common lyrical themes in the entire dataset something they call cognitive tension, which they define as, quote, internal conflicts expressed by characters, decision-making, and problem-solving, end quote. So I'll need to decide, moving forward, if I really am suggesting a correlation between conflicting lyrics and dual leading tone loops, or just posing this idea of internal conflict as a fruitful interpretive strategy. The second avenue for future research I'm pursuing is producing statistical evidence to support my hunch, driven by decades of close listening, that the major three chord and thus the dual leading tone loop is more common in post-millennial music than in pre-millennial. While I'll have a more carefully curated corpus study on this in the future, let me go ahead and share some evidence for this. This comes from preliminary data analysis I've been doing with Chris White, author of the books Music in the Data and the 2025 forthcoming The AI Music Problem, The Mismatch Between Machine Learning and Musical Creativity, both of which are with Routledge. Chris and I started by looking at a famous repository of top 20 songs released between 1958 and 1991 called the McGill Billboard Corpus. When we analyzed all of the chords in those songs, we found about 15% of them use some form of chromaticism. The most common chromatic chords were, in this order, flat 7, major 2, and flat 3. I hasten to point out that we have heard none of these three chromatic chords in any of the post-millennial songs in this podcast. Next, we compared the older McGill Billboard corpus to some data from about 9,000 chord loops in hit songs released up until 2024. In contrast to the 15% total chromaticism in the older McGill Billboard database, we now see that only 5% of post-millennial chord loops use any chromaticism whatsoever. And, more importantly, can you guess what the single most common chromatic chord in post-millennial music is? Yep, the major 3 chord. Whereas pre-millennial music uses a lot of bluesy, flat-side, modal borrowing, post-millennial music, when it uses chromaticism at all, favors this major 3 chord above all else. I hope to have shown in this podcast how the major 3 chord engenders my dual leading tone loop and suggested how its tonally indeterminate nature might be fruitfully applied to lyrics in which narrators express conflicting emotions. Thank you for listening.
Brad would like to thank Chris White, who shared data on chord loops out of the goodness of his heart. He'd also like to thank his undergraduate research assistant, Charles Brockus, for creating the audio clips of all these great pop songs. Many thanks to John White at the University of Kansas Center for Online and Distance Learning, who hooked them up with a lovely vocal booth and state-of-the-art equipment for recording the narration. And of course, this podcast would not be possible without the SMT Pod team, including Brad's insightful peer reviewers Evan Ware and Bryn Hughes, the incredibly well-organized team lead Caitlin Martinkus, and the patient producer Amy Hatch.
Visit our website, smt-pod.org, for supplemental materials related to this episode and to learn how to submit an episode proposal. Join in the conversation by tweeting us your questions and comments at smt_pod. SMT Pod's theme music was written by Maria Tartaglia, with closing music by Ika Zhong.